1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. This is Your Turn, a live call-in show featuring spirited discussion and debate about issues that matter to the community. Stay with us to hear what Northwest Florida thinks. Better yet, call in at 623-1330 and tell us what you think. It's Your Turn here on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. Now, here's the host of Your Turn.
Thanks so much. We've got 1 hour left of this version of Your Turn, the program that I've dubbed Meeting Nonsense with Common Sense. My name's Renee Giacchino. I'm corporate counsel for the Center for Individual Freedom. To learn more about my organization, please visit us on the internet at www.cfif.org. Well, we're going to talk about healthcare reform, and no one better to talk about this issue with and to educate us about it than the former head of the American Medical Association. Please welcome to Your Turn, Dr. Donald Palmisano. Thank you so much for joining us, Doctor.
Thank you, Renee, for having me on the program.
Well, we appreciate it. You're our neighbor just to the west of us. I've got to get my bearings here. You're at Tulane University School of Medicine, is that right? Clinical professor there
and teach a seminar on leadership in medicine. I've lived in the New Orleans area all my life. I'm a native.
Well, welcome to Northwest Florida. We're happy to have you on the radio with us here, and this will go out nationwide as well. Before we start talking about the issue of health care reform, and we're so pleased to have a health care expert to do that with us, I want to talk about your book because it sounds very interesting. You have a book called On Leadership, Essential Principles for Success.
Yes, thank you very much for mentioning that.
Tell us a little bit about that book and the folks that you see in leadership who are going to determine our fate, I think, on this issue of healthcare reform. How are they doing in terms of what you would suggest in your book?
Well, you can read more about the book at onleadership.us, the website, and it has the reviews. It was given a great review by Publishers Weekly, and there are multiple five-star reviews at Amazon. Basically, the concept of the book is to define the essential elements that make up true leadership, as opposed to someone who has the title but is not truly a leader. I also point out that people are not born leaders. You can become a leader, but you have to understand what these principles are. And essential to being a leader is courage and the ability to make a decision in a crisis. Those are two of the 20 elements. So, what I did, I studied people in history, and I interviewed people that are still alive that I consider leaders, one of which is one of the individuals is Bud LaMelle, who was at Point de Hoc. He was the ranger who was responsible for knocking out the giant German guns at the time of the D-Day invasion. I talk about George Washington from a historical perspective. He is my gold standard of leadership. He always consulted with everyone, and then he led the troops. He always put himself in harm's way first. And he was a person that was ethical and could be trusted. What he said, you could believe in. I mentioned my dad, who was my personal hero. He was a brave policeman. He would go into a situation such as the time he went into a hostage situation, put his gun down, walked into the room, and then took the gun away from the man who was holding people hostages. He put himself at risk, and his men admired and revered him because of that courage and leadership. And so when we come to what's happening in America today, what we must do is ask the leaders, are they doing the things my dad taught me? Do your homework, have courage, and don't give up. And so the first question we would ask of current leaders, are you doing your homework? And one of the points that I make in the book, you don't do your homework if you suddenly rush something through Congress without reading it and voting on it, without understanding what's in it. And I make the point that you have to look at the long-term consequences. The famous book, Economics in One Lesson, by Henry Hazlitt. So you have to look at not only the immediate effect, but also the long-term effect. I also mention in my talks and speeches on leadership, The Road to Serfdom by Hayek, An Animal Farm by George Orwell, because people can promise you utopia, but you may end up with dystopia. So what we need to do is make sure that whatever is passed in Congress has been subjected to critical review, and that the statistics that are given are correct statistics. There are so many ways to bring error into statistics, improper sampling, There are many, many eras, and I talk about that in the book. And so what we need to do is to distinguish between what's really the facts and what is just make-believe information, more propaganda, and look at the long-term effects. And so the debate about health system reform is really about leadership. And what we're going to end up with will depend on the American people, because if the American people become educated through programs like your program and your work, and all of us speaking out on the issue, then I am convinced that the people in Congress will listen, because they'll be afraid that if they don't listen to the public, they won't be reelected.
Well, in doing that, I mean, you're obviously doing a yeoman's service, acting, with courage at a time of crisis as the spokesperson for the Coalition to Protect Patient Rights. Tell us a little bit about that organization. Then I want to delve further into some of these issues that could be severely impact the patient-physician relationship, you know, being one example, if people don't do their homework, like you suggest.
Right. Well, I am the spokesperson for the Coalition to Protect Patients' Rights. It's a nonpartisan, grassroots coalition of patients, healthcare professionals, advocacy groups, and engaged citizens who are concerned about the current healthcare debate going on in Washington. You can visit the website. It's kept up to date every day with new news items, with the views of the coalition. There's a blog there, and you go to protectpatientsrights.org. protectpatientsrights.org. And the first thing that you will see there is that the coalition believes that a public plan would be a disaster for America, because there's no way that there could be a public plan, the so-called public plan, which is really a government plan, that can compete fairly with the private insurers, because the public plan actually sets the rules, they referee the game, and they can set the rates lower than is economically feasible and run the other people out of business, the other companies out of business, because they have unlimited power and unlimited finances, namely our taxes.
Right.
And in the long run, we just get the taxes increasing. And a very important thing is that the patient should always be in the center of health system reform, with the physician as trusted advisor. And part of that is the right of the patient and physician to properly contract. So if government says, our government, and I, you know, I'm a loyal American, I'm a veteran, and I praise our wonderful military for defending our freedoms. I frequently say that in public lectures. But what we need to make sure is that the government, under the goal of saying we're going to give something free to everyone or give health care to everyone, they really take away the rights of the patient to choose the physician. They take away the rights of the patient for medical privacy and medical record confidentiality. They take away the right of the physician-patient to contract. So the government, in order to be fiscally responsible, the government could say for those people that we deem need help, whether it's the poor, whether it's the disabled, whatever the group of individuals might be, we would give them a defined contribution, a set amount of money that can only be used, sort of like a voucher, to buy insurance, and then have an array of choices where there's true competition. And if you don't like the insurance company, when it's time to renew, you go with a different insurance company, as opposed to the government setting these rigid so-called guidelines that end up becoming mandates, and then you get rationing of care and long lines. American public, the people in America, are not interested in long lines. They're not interested in waiting and waiting until they perhaps die on the waiting list, as happens in Canada, as happens in Great Britain. And when you point out all of these problems in these other countries where the government controls medicine, then the opposition who wants government control medicine, they will immediately bring up another country. And then when you visit and investigate that company, you see the problems there. The best person to decide how much they should spend on health care should be the individual, the patient. And you can do that with health savings accounts. And if you don't spend the money, it rolls over the next year, into the next year. And you also can buy a catastrophic, and you should, and you are mandated to buy catastrophic coverage over that. But you become a prudent purchaser. It's like if the government said, there are two other points I want to make. If the government says, everybody can have a new car, just go out and get a car, do you think everybody's going to go buy a used Volkswagen? Very few. Most people would say, hey, if the government's paying for it, I think I'll have I'm going to have a Cadillac or a Lexus or BMW. Or when the government says, you, doctor, you can't charge more than $100 for this procedure, when in reality it costs $120 to deliver the procedure. That's like telling the grocer, we're going to price fix what you sell steaks for. $1, that's the most you can charge for a steak to a customer. Well, it costs $1.20. I'm just making these numbers up to show you that you have to make a profit on every sale, otherwise you go out of business. And so the wholesaler charges $1.20. And so how many steaks you think the grocer's going to sell? He's not going to order any steaks if he loses 20 cents on every steak. So who suffers in the long run?
The consumer.
The consumer suffers in the long run. They don't get steak, and the same thing with medical care. As Medicaid, perfect example of a government program is Medicaid. And you see the payment rates are so low that more and more physicians don't take patients who have Medicaid insurance. Some of them treat the patients. They just don't even send a bill in. They say, I can't treat them all because if I did, I wouldn't be able to pay my staff.
Right. But it costs them very often more in their time and their staff's time to even file the claim and take care of that side of the practice of medicine. Well, let me go back then to what you talk about. You know, a lot of people believe that we're not going to see a change that's for the good of everyone unless and until it hits the pocketbook or the medical care of the members of Congress or their family members. That's really going to be what's going to be the wake-up call, that you know, these battle cries for, you know, Jane Q. and John Q. Public to get out there, call their legislators, which I still encourage everybody to do, and tell them how important, you know, it is to all of us that we still be able to maintain our patient-physician relationship and choose our own care and have those options available to us, that it's not until it's going to affect them. Under Obamacare and some of these different scenarios that are out there, the public option and whatnot, would they apply equally to members of Congress? And for the first time, you know, are they going to have to play by the same rules as the general public?
You know, there's so few details out there because they don't have a bill that's been completely scored and presented to the Senate.
They haven't done their homework.
But you can be assured that they're not going to be under the same plan. I mean, you can make a prediction and have an accuracy of about 99%. They're going to be Congress will be under the Federal Employees Health Benefit Program, and what you really should do, what America should do, is say before we rush into changing the whole healthcare system, let's do two things immediately. The first thing is let's see who's truly uninsured because they can't afford the insurance. Now, if you take that 47, there's some excellent articles recently written about that. But if the 47 million, if you take out the people who are here illegally, which probably 10 million people fit into that category when they put the number out there, if you take out the people who are who make over $75,000 a year who elect not to buy the insurance, that takes care of another 10 million, 15 million. If you take the people who are eligible for the SCHIP program and Medicaid, but for some reason haven't signed up, you take out another 10 million. Well, then you whittle the number down to not quite 47 million, much less than that. So what needs to be done is to say, okay, what can we do immediately to help these individuals? Let's make sure. Everybody gets care right now. They go to the emergency room, and under the EMTALA law, the emergency has to be taken care of. And so what we want to do is let's take care of those people. And then what I would suggest is that Congress immediately be taken off the Federal Employees Health Benefit Program and immediately be put on Medicaid so that they can personally experience what it's like to be on a government-run program. And then when they're on Medicaid, they will see some of the problems and come up with better enhancements than they're coming up with right now.
I love that solution. That's the best solution I have heard to date. On that note, we're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, we'll have about 5 minutes left with Dr. Donald Palmisano. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be right back after this short break.
Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
If you are just tuning in, you've missed a wonderful half of an interview. We've been talking with Dr. Donald Palmisano, and he is a former president of the American Medical Association, and now he is a spokesperson for an organization that is doing a yeoman service. It's called the Coalition to Protect Patients' Rights. And again, if you want to learn more about them, you can find them on the web at www.protectpatientrights.org. Well, Doctor, all eyes are on Washington, D.C. right now, but they're kind of watching what's going on with the Sotomayor confirmation hearings, and it seems like healthcare is taking a back seat, which absolutely is the wrong thing for folks to do. We can't let this go quiet and get under the radar. Am I right about that?
You're absolutely correct, and we have to keep our eye on this, and we have to make sure that questions are answered, that the material is put forth so that everybody can read it, including those who have to vote on it. And we have to look at the details. You know, the problem's always with the details. For instance, when you see one group coming up and saying, oh, well, we'll support that, we're going to go forward with that. Well, what was there a deal cut on that? You want to ask those questions, because is there some other group, for instance, physicians who own hospitals, suddenly are they going to be excluded now going forward? Was some sort of arrangement? Who knows what goes on? But those are the kind of questions you want to ask. In other words, you want to look at the bill to see, number one, if patients and physicians have the right to properly contract. In that tri-committee bill that came out, the draft, they forbid the right of physicians and patients to properly contract after what government pays or whatever the plan would pay. And that, you know, the best definition I've ever heard of liberty is the absence of coercion. And the hallmark of the free enterprise system is the right to properly contract. People died giving us those rights. Why would we give up those rights? And so people need to make sure that rights that have been won by the blood of other Americans, we don't give it up suddenly in some bill that gets rushed through Congress.
Dr. Palmisano, in your book, you referenced your book on leadership, Essential Principles for Success, that I brought up. You mentioned that in that book you write about how people can promise you utopia, and very often it's the opposite of what you will get. Could you summarize for us, is that what you think could happen with Obamacare?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, when President Obama spoke to the AMA, I was in the audience as a former president of the AMA, and he's a very eloquent speaker. And when he got to the medical liability, he said, I know you don't like people. And I'm paraphrasing the president. He was more eloquent than I am saying it now. But he said, I know you don't like people looking over your shoulder. And everybody clapped and cheered. And he says, but I'm not for caps. Well, we know that caps on non-economic damage is the right kind of cap, can be very effective. And so there were some people booing at that point. But where he missed the opportunity was to say, I may not be for caps, but I understand your problem, and we're going to do something about it. Don't just say, as he did, well, you know, if you go along with these guidelines, that'll give you some defense, perhaps, or whatever. Instead, he should have said, we're going to try health courts in selected areas where there are problems, like New York and Pennsylvania. Or he should have said, we're going to try an administrative system as a pilot in some states that have problems, states that don't have effective caps. That's what he could have done. So all of these things where he says, oh, you know, you are healers, and those things get, you know, applause. But, yes, we could lose medicine as we know it, the great innovations in medicine, the new discoveries, everything. I mean, this is, as I said, I teach the medical students. And when I was a medical student at Tulane University School of Medicine, in our book, The Diagnosis of Childhood Leukemia, had multiple pages for diagnosis. The treatment for childhood leukemia was one paragraph, and it said universally fatal. 100% of the time, the kids die. Well, now 85-90% of the kids survive. That's progress. What we don't want to do is lose those progress. We don't want to be like the NICE committee in England, where they don't allow you to have certain drugs because they don't think it's cost effective. You ought to have the right to get whatever you want. Now, it doesn't mean that you're going to necessarily get it free, but whatever government gives toward a treatment, you ought to have the right to supplement that. You ought to have the right to properly contract with your patient or with your pharmacist or whatever, whoever has the drug. And we stand the risk. You see, in the long run, the more government price fixing, the more you get rationing, the more people lose access to care. And what we want to do is have the patients able to see the doctor of his or her choice when they need to see the doctor, and the doctor is there promptly to help them and be a consultant to them. And we're going to lose that, because always, when you have government micromanagement, I could tell you a story, we don't have time, what happens when they had pre-admission certification. When the government passed Medicare in 1965, there was a section there called 1801, and it said no federal interference in the practice of medicine.
Ah.
Now, when you read that, I got that in my book, when you read that, by the way, my book is for the general public, it's not just for doctors, it talks about leadership in general, but I use that as an example. When you read that, then Mr. Ball, who was head of Social Security under three different presidents, he said, well, that's where we started, but we soon had to deviate from that. Well, that's always what happens when the government promises. They did it in Canada. They did it in England. They promise, and then they don't deliver the goods. And then in Canada, they even made it illegal for you to go outside of the system of the Canadian healthcare system. Now, there was a recent suit in the Quebec province, and the Supreme Court there said, well, because the delays are so long, you have the right to have a private hospital and go to private doctors there. But we don't want to get into that situation. Micromanagement will destroy the practice of medicine. And as far as all these research things that they're talking about, that's fine. Doctors have always been in favor of research. But have that available to the public and the doctors. Don't mandate that the doctor can only use that treatment because they'll never be up to the latest in medicine. We want our patients to get the very best.
Yeah, that's why they come here from other countries. Well, Dr. Palmisano, I mean, I think the best idea I have heard ever on this issue is the one that you mentioned where, you know, if members of Congress had to join Medicaid, the ranks of Medicaid, that the system, you know, it might just be deemed acceptable for the rest of us then.
Well, it's a privilege to be on your show, Renee. Thank you very much, and I enjoyed being with you.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate having you on the program. Again, folks, if you want to find out how you can help, what you can do, the Coalition to Protect Patients' Rights, according to their website, they will work collaboratively with anyone who shares their vision of healthcare reform. Undoubtedly, there are a lot of folks out there in our listening audience who share this vision. Maybe there's something that you can do working together with them so that we can have healthcare reform and some type of a system that will work for all of us, whether you're a member of Congress or not. And that's what we need to have happen. Dr. Donald Palmisano, again, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. The website address one more time, if you would, please. Oh, I think we've lost him. Well, I'll give that out for folks. It is www.protectpatientrights.org. That's www.protectpatientrights.org, and they believe that the government should not be involved in private personal discussion between a doctor and a patient as they decide the best course of medical treatment. The coalition was formed to ensure that healthcare reform builds on our current healthcare system, and doing some wonderful work. Look them up. We'll be right back.